Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You getting more bronze medals today?
Got a gold today and a bronze, though. Not just a bronze, a gold and a bronze.
We're good at finishing third.
First medal, though, since 1952 in two-man bobsled.
You're excited, aren't you?
I love it. Hulk him if you got him. That's my headline.
That's your headline?
Yeah, Saturday's headline.
Best athlete of the day yesterday was Doug McDermott of Creighton, but that's all right. Don't worry about it.
My Saturday headline, though, was better. All right? Use the force. Use the force, Oshie. You don't like that one either?
No. It's like Dick and I were driving in the car, and we're listening to the shootout on radio. And when Oshie scores... Because Dick kept yelling, put in Kane! Next guy, put in Kane! Next guy, put in Kane! I said, they're not listening to you. I said, you really want Kane? He goes, yeah, he's the one guy I know.
But you know, Steve...
So the Westwood guy, when Oshie scores, he goes, Oshie, can you see? I'm like, oh, the two of us look at it like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I heard that one as well.
Stop trying. I mean, I'm sorry. This is why I don't have a, quote, signature call on stuff.
Like, Oshie just, and Soshi. I heard that one already.
Oh, brother. Just win the next game.
Listen, Doc was the best because, I'm sorry, every hockey game that goes overtime after a shootout should end this way. And there should never be a tie because there was nothing more talked about this weekend than that particular end of that hockey game going to a sudden death shootout. And when Doc Emmerich said bottom of the eighth, I just about lost it.
Yeah. I asked my class today what they watched. And I said, how many of you watched the Olympics? And a few hands went up. I asked if they watched the NBA All-Star Game. Only two, maybe three hands went up. I asked them if they went to the Lady Lion Game. A few hands went up. I asked them if they went to the men's basketball game. Several hands went up. I asked them if they went to wrestling. No hands went up. And then I asked them if they watched the U.S. Olympic hockey game. Every hand went up. And that's what you'll find. I mean, you're talking about now, my group is 18 to 20, is, you know, actually my group is 20 to 22 years old. And there, I don't think there's a teenager in the class. But these are the young people. Okay? Ratings are down 18 to 49. In fact, they're down a lot, except for, guess what? Hockey.
Now, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all by that, though.
It's an established sport with name recognition.
That's absolutely correct. There are very few players that were in that rush, and I'm not a huge hockey fan, but I know it, and I know enough to know some names in there, and I knew the majority of the guys playing on both sides.
I mean, Kovalchuk used to play in the NHL, and he was one of the selections in the shootout repeatedly as well. You know, Malkin didn't get a shot, which I thought was interesting. Now, Pavel Datsyuk of the Detroit Red Wings, he's just really, really good. He had a great game. The men then beat Slovenia 5-1. The women today outshot Sweden 70-9.
Do you know Sweden pulled their goalie at the end of the second period? She was gave up three goals at that point on 47 shots.
Wallner. And Wallner was really good. I mean, Wallner was really good in this game. And you'd never know it because they lost 6-1. She was the best player on the ice. She just was under. I mean, they were outshot 29-1 in the first period, down 3-0. 29-1. Canada won today, beat Switzerland. Merrill Davis, Charlie White of Ann Arbor, University of Michigan, won the gold medal today. First ever for the United States in ice dancing. Won with complete ease today over Virtue and Moyer. It really was not close. And Virtue and Moyer, by the way, evidently skated great, earned a career high. And still they got, and still Davis and White were superior. And then Holcomb gets the first medal for the United States in 62 years, since 1952, in the two-man bobsled. Now, they were gold medal favorites going in, but they ended up with a bronze. And they get a medal out of it. The Bodie Miller interview, a lot of people are talking about that, went way too long.
I think there were too many questions in that interview. Just my thought.
But you don't know what people don't know is what role the producer played in it and what role the interviewer played in it.
And that's one of the things we talked about this morning during On the Mark. Was she being fed question after question, and was Cooper making the questions on her own?
Let me give you a case in point of what I did on the Big Ten Network Friday night. On the 6 o'clock show, the pregame show with Mike Hall, they sent it to me to do an interview with Guy Gadowski, the producer in Chicago. I asked him the first three questions. You know what the win over Michigan meant moving forward. The play of Matthew Scoff, the goaltender in big games. I asked about the matchup with Michigan State. And then Mike Leary, who is the producer, says to me in my ear, now he didn't say a word to me during this until this point, when Guy Gadowski was answering the third question, he says, "Steve, if you have a great one, ask it. If not, end it." Okay? He didn't tell me what question to ask. Well, I did have one more question, and it dealt with David Glenn, the young man who left the team for three games because he donated bone marrow. And all he knows is that the bone marrow went to a woman in her 50s, and it helped save her life. And it's a painful procedure, yet he had come back from that. And not only did he come back from it, despite being less than 100%, he scored a goal in that win over Michigan. So the question dealt with the lift that he's given the team based on personal heroism by helping out someone else, and then getting back and playing, and not only playing but being productive. That was the last question. And as they said in Chicago, that qualified for what they were looking for. At the end of the second period, I interviewed Michigan State's captain, Greg Wolf. Same story. Question one, question two, question three. I think the third question I asked him about the importance of winning neutral ice in the third period to swing the game one way or the other. And the same thing. Mike said to me, he says, "Steve, you have a great question. Ask it. If not, send it back to the studio." Greg Wolf answered the question. I did not have what I consider to be a great question, and I sent it back to Mike Hall in Chicago. That's the communication that happens for me with producers. I do not get question suggestions. It's probably been 20 years since I've had a question suggestion from a producer. But I also have more experience and a more of an interview experience on the air than Kristen Cooper does, who's a skier trying to do it. So she may have been getting fed questions and help only because it's not her comfort zone.
Well, and Bodie did tweet out late in the day yesterday or early today, that he appreciated everyone for sticking up for him, but be gentle with Kristen Cooper. It was a crazy emotional moment and not her fault. And he said that his emotions were very raw. She asked questions that every interviewer would have. Pushing is part of it. She wasn't trying to cause pain.
In fact, I haven't been critical of her in one sentence here. All I've said is that you don't know what the producer was pushing her to do, if anything. And then she was just asking questions. It ended up being an emotional moment and so forth. Plus, NBC can edit that out, you know. that wasn't live.
And that was the real problem I had. And I said this morning. I think the third question was too many.
They're trying to push the emotion part. They're trying to draw people in. I got it. It's a TV show.
Right. But NBC could have cut that last part out. They could have stopped the interview and edited it after the second question, which I thought was the limit to me. The third question went too far, and I think that's where they should have edited it out.
Best performance of the day, Doug McDermott, Creighton, 39 points. Best team performance of the day, Nebraska at Michigan State. Two bad officiating calls over the weekend, one at Arizona State, one at Duke. How do you mess up the possession arrow? How do you do that? You start the second half, team starts with the ball, you flip the arrow. Duke got the ball to start the second half. Late in the game, key moment, tie up, should go to Maryland. Nope, they never switched the possession arrow. Duke got the ball. I mean, that's a massive foul-up.
Where do you point the finger there? Should the officials have noticed that?
Officials, benches, and the scoring table.
All three need to take some responsibility.
All three need to take responsibility. Arizona State game. Okay. Arizona State upsets Arizona. TJ McConnell takes a shot to try and give Arizona the lead. It's blocked. It's picked up by the guard, who makes an incredibly stupid play and then compounds it by doing something incredibly stupid, and he gets away with both. Okay? You get the ball. Guess what you do with the ball? You're wide open with a one-point lead and 3 seconds left. What do you do, people? Time and score. What do you do? Dribble it out. Instead, he goes down, gets cocky, and slam dunks it, and then hangs on the rim for an eternity. Okay? Now, he hangs on the rim because he thinks the game's over. Well, guess what? It's not over, and he should have been issued a technical foul for hanging on the rim the way he did. Because he didn't just hang on the rim to brace himself. He hung on the rim and swung on it in celebration. It should have been a technical foul. The officials blew that one. The kid blew that one. Then Arizona took one shot to try and tie it again for another overtime, a third overtime, and came up just short off the front iron. I mean, the kid gets away with an incredibly basketball stupid play. Time and score. Dribble it out and go to the and then when they tell you it's over, celebrate. He dunks it. Guess what happens on the dunk? The clock stops automatically. It's not the end of the first half.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Serve the Valley for decades. They've served families for decades, businesses for decades. Why don't you find out why? They take such good care of their customers. They care about each and every one of them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Looking forward to May and the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. We will be there at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Really looking forward to that, and a great time. Great, great time. We're also in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The United States mining gold for the fifth time in the games today. Merrill Davis and Charlie White, with relative ease, did win the gold medal in ice dancing, beating out Virtue and Moyer, who had won the gold in Vancouver. Virtue and Moyer, by the way, skated very well with a personal best. But Davis and White already had a big lead to begin with, and they expanded the lead with a spectacular performance. Choreographed for those of you who enjoy Dancing with the Stars on ABC, their routine, Davis and White, was choreographed by Derek Huff, who's one of the professional dancers on Dancing with the Stars. So that is tonight. That's the fifth gold medal. The United States' first medal in two-man bobsled in 62 years with Steve Holcomb at the helm, who piloted the four-man bobsled team to the gold in Vancouver. He now gets the two-man bob title with a bronze medal today. The Russians were first and the Swiss were in the bronze. Fog wiped out two events today because in Sochi it is really warm. It's in the 60s. In many areas, and that's one of the problems the Olympic Games are having right now. They've made a decision in their decision-making to take it to cities. So when they went to Nagano, they had rain. Now, Salt Lake was okay because there's so many mountains around Salt Lake. Okay, fine. They had to truck in snow and drop snow from planes to get Vancouver right. Sochi's had a lot of the same problem. Now, Pyongyang's a smaller town of about 50,000 in South Korea in the mountains. That may be okay, but I think they need to rethink what they're doing here. That instead of, because Sochi's a city of 350,000 people, I don't think a lot of people realize this is not a village. This is a city of 350,000 people. And I think they need to rethink what they do with the Winter Games. It needs to be in an area where it is winter. The last small town to host the Winter Games, Lillehammer, in 1994. It's the last small town to host. I think they need to rethink this and get it to areas where it really is a true snow area. Now, Pyongyang is in South Korea. Average daily temperature this time of the year, about 31. In the night, it's at the teens. That might be good enough. But for 2022 and so forth, Barcelona's already been rejected, which is good. I mean, it's not just like, hey, here's a city and there are the mountains, so we're going to go up there. No, for winter sports, you need to have winter conditions. Take, for example, we were talking about Bodie Miller's run and Steve Weibrecht winning a silver, his first anything since winning in Vancouver. He had done nothing for 4 years. I mean, he participated, but hadn't won. But the ski conditions where the top of the mountain's one temperature and the bottom of the mountain is another temperature, where you're going from winter to spring conditions all on the same course as you drop about a mile and a third, mile and a half. I mean, that's what these people are not used to. The conditions are not consistent enough to be right. And they need to rethink what they're doing with the city approach that they've been taking from Salt Lake to Turin. Turin was all right, but then Vancouver, now this. They've got to rethink. Nagano, they've got to rethink a little bit of that when it comes to the Winter Games. And it needs to be in a place where it is a consistent snowfall, snow area. Now, whether that is possible to think like that, or the money is available for something like that, I don't know.
Well, and you talked with Jason Turtleman, and one of the things that stood out to me when you did that interview was he talked about the opening ceremonies and being bused to Sochi from the mountain venues where they have an Olympic village there, then getting down with the venue area in the coastal cluster, and then meeting up with the Olympians there from the village there. You're separating your Olympians yet, and not to mention the fact that you're separating your Olympics in general.
Right. I mean, it's spread out over a 60 to 75 mile radius from the sea. That's the perimeter in which they're taking place. All right, Erin Hamlin. She won a bronze medal in luge yesterday morning. I had a chance to talk to one of the medalists. The United States has 18 medals in the game, currently tied with Russia for the number one overall spot. Erin has one of them, a bronze medal in the luge. I talked to her yesterday morning while she was in Sochi. Here we go. Erin, when you stand up on top of a podium, your flag is up there. It may not be the anthem, but it's your flag. What did that moment mean to you?
It was pretty amazing. You know, I could see my parents and family and friends in the front row, and I was kind of locked onto the flag the whole time. And yeah, like you said, even though it's not the anthem, it's so amazing. And that's kind of like the moment that everyone that does winter sports or Olympic sports are vying for. That's like what we want to do. And so having to be able to actually live that is amazing, and it's something that I never expected to happen, but I'm so grateful that it has, and it's going to be with me for the rest of my life.
Also, the fact that you've done this in a sport where the United States has had mixed results over the years, do you feel in some way now you've elevated the sport where the door is now open down the road for others to get gold and silver, including yourself?
I do, and I really do hope that that's the case, and that it happens, and that down the road and in the future, it might get more people, more kids into the sport. It might get it a little bit more attention. Just get it on the radar a little bit. It's a great sport. We have great programs and great people involved, and it's a lot of fun. And I think it'll give us definitely a boost. The size of that is yet to be determined, but I'm going to do everything I can to take advantage of this moment and really spread it around.
Obviously, in this state, Pennsylvania, kids grow up, they want to be football players, basketball players, wrestlers, and if the snow ever melts, maybe even a baseball player. But for you, growing up in New York, what got you into this, which is obviously something that is, as you would say, unusual for a kid to get into?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these programs are called the U.S. Slider Search, and the program is run by actually currently working at Reset the Way program to promote it and to partner to kind of get some more attention and funding. Basically, in the country and takes kids 8 or 9 to and kind of get them exposed to the sport. And that's the way I got involved. So it's kind of a really cool thing.
Okay, Erin. You mentioned how you got into this thing, all right? We always hear about, obviously, the figure skater that goes every morning to the rink and so forth. Give me an idea of the training regimen it was like for you, and then the first time that you actually went down a run and went, whoa, I love this.
So when you first got into the sport, it was basically they would hold, when I cut out, went through the first screening, get invited to come back as part of the development team. And they would basically have a camp, like usually a week or two long camp, in the winter and then in the summer. And in the summer it would just be training, like in the kind of, you know, we start at such a young age that you're not like going in to pump iron all day. You know, it's a little bit different and it's very sport specific. We do a lot of wheel training at that age where we put wheels on sleds and go down small hills, like on a road, a parking lot or something, get the feel for being on a sled. And we work in our facility in Lake Placid, which is an indoor chunk of track that's refrigerated year-round, so we can really start to perfect the start movement. We don't have to get up like crack of dawn for ice time like we do more of. You know, we have kind of a scheduled day, and since the training locations is either Lake Placid or Park City, Utah, a lot of it is, you know, my parents driving me up there, dropping me off. I stay at the training for a week or two, and they pick me up after, and I come after a week of, you know, everyday training on the track, in the gym, playing games, doing like organized agility workouts, stuff like that, really introducing the kids to.
Every track, Erin, has its own personality. When did you realize that this track in Sochi fit the personality of how you want to go?
It actually, when we first got here, I was the biggest thing. It was a little bit hard for me to get into a good rhythm, but after being back a couple more times and getting a lot of runs and training, and getting to race on it once, I took a lot of notes and really tried to take in as much as I could, even when I wasn't on the ice just watching and running. But really, it wasn't until we came back this time, the game, the first day, I got on the ice, and everything felt really great. I was really comfortable, and I was like, okay, wow, things have finally clicked. Good timing for that. It did take longer than I would have thought it would. I would have hoped, I guess.
Well, it's incredible, though, because you go through and you take your initial runs, and you look around and you say to yourself, I'm in the thick of it. I mean, talk about the killer instinct kicking in, and how much did that track actually slow down for you mentally as you went through the turns?
You know, we do a lot of visualization. So as I'm going down, I kind of have like a natural reaction of what I need to be doing. And so by the time I'm sitting at the handles ready to pull off, and this time it happened really well, but we're always kind of hoping that we have that confidence that we're going to be able to do that. So it definitely, time does slow down a bit when we are on the sled. It's when things start to go wrong that you realize, okay, it's going pretty fast. But, you know, going into day two and after the first run, and I realized, wow, I have a lot of potential to be on the podium, it was kind of surreal. You know, I definitely hadn't planned on that. And I was just really enjoying it. I had great runs. I had consistency all week. So I really just knew that I just had to stick to what I knew and keep doing what I was doing, and it would be okay.
Is South Korea a possibility now for you? Can you think, I mean, what's so tough about your sport is thinking 4 years ahead to the next one. Is it something that you want to do?
You know, it's the time right now. You know, this is a long time, even though a lot of times it feels like it goes so fast. I'll be back next year, most likely, and I think after that it'll be kind of a year-by-year decision, and I'll see how I feel and how everything's going.
America's proud of you. No question about that. You're on the cover of USA Today when you picked up your bronze medal. Congratulations on what you've accomplished, and enjoy the rest of the games. It must be nice at least going around knowing that you're finished and that you have a medal.
Yes, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. I can't wait to come home and share it with everyone.
Thank you, Erin.
All right, thank you.
That's Erin Hamlin. With us yesterday from Sochi, winning the bronze medal and enjoying life as a bronze medalist when your event is in the opening week. She's staying all the way through to the closing ceremonies and enjoying life. And we congratulate her. She was great to talk with, and we hope you enjoyed listening to her as well. We'll come back with more. Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
How many presidents do you want to save?
Save more than you ever thought
at Sunbury Motors Ford during their President's Day sales event.
Choose from over 400
new Fords with savings up to
$10,200.
With interest rates as low as 0% for up to 72 months and no payments for 90 days. Select from over 20 new 2014 Ford Focuses for as low as $16,390. SMC has 17 of the hottest selling 2014 Ford Fusions starting at $18,980. If you're having trouble getting through the snow, Sunbury Motors has new 2014 Ford Escapes priced under $20,000.
If a new truck is on your list,
pick from the largest selection of new F-150s in all of Central Pennsylvania. A whopping 100 at one location, priced from just $23,953. Sunbury Motors President's Day sales event is the area's first huge sale of the year, and the one you won't want to miss. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Head up sunburymotors.com.
Proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley for almost a century.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
It's Bob said time on this freezing night. What Jamaica slide by?
All right.
It's Bob said time.
Are they serving vodka in the studio that I don't know about?
What's the matter? You don't like the new Jamaican bobsled team song?
Well, let's face it. I mean, considering that I'm still waiting for them to finish, that's a little bit slow, don't you think?
Oh, that's cold. I mean, true, but cold.
Look, I watched their second run last night. I give them all the credit in the world for being there. But right. You know what? They were all over the track.
Almost sideways.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. It was rough to watch. Okay, got a lot to talk about. One of the things I want to discuss here is Nebraska won yesterday in basketball. They won at Michigan State. And a couple of transfers, Teran Petaway at 23 and Walter from Texas Tech, and Walter Pitchford, who transferred from Florida, had 18. That's 41 of the 59 points they had yesterday. And Tim Miles has done a great job of getting out in front. And in today's media, in today's culture, an individual that just wants to, it's really difficult for them if they're in a situation that needs promotion. John Calipari's always out front all the time. He has a dynamic personality. I don't know. Have you ever been around? I've been around John a lot. I don't know how much you've been around him. You know, he has that vibrant, dynamic personality. Well, at Kentucky, it's just a nice add-on. He doesn't need to There's no, you know, you could have a coach there that just wants to coach. You look at the situation here in Penn State football. Joe Paterno, and he told me so many times, and he told others this as well. He says, look, if I could just coach, that'd be great. You know, that's just what I want to do. And you can't blame them. That's what they got into. They got into it to be a coach. Today you have to be part psychologist, part coach, part instructor, part publicity man, part front man. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to do. I mean, you have to wear a lot of different hats. Now, there's certain guys. So Mike Krzyzewski doesn't have to. Or Roy Williams doesn't have to. Tom Izzo doesn't have to. College football, Nick Saban doesn't have to. College football, he doesn't have to do that. Hey, Jimbo Fisher probably doesn't have to do that anymore at Florida State, just like Joe and Bobby Bowden didn't have to do that. But in today's media, when you are trying to get fans hooked in on your program, you need to have a personality that's up front and does a good job of letting you know what the successes are. I've talked about Ed DeChellis, who now coaches at Navy. Ed DeChellis is a very, very good basketball coach and loves being a basketball coach. But he doesn't have the, you know, you can't make yourself something you're not. And he's not that out front, dynamic pitch man that puts himself out there as a personality. It's just the way it goes. You just can't make yourself something you're not. Penn State has a couple of guys like that in James Franklin and Patrick Chambers. They'll take Cale Sanders. Cale doesn't have to do that. Cale also has no ego at all, zero. But Cale also is has a big-time backbone when it comes to how to run his program, and has a big-time backbone about how to improve the sport nationwide, and he'll go to lengths to do it. For example, Boston University threatening to shut down the program. He wrestles there. They sell it out. He's making a point. He's doing what he can to help out Boston University wrestling. Goes out to Utah Valley State, sells it out. Same story. Iowa, because of the rotation, is not on Penn State's schedule in wrestling this year. And that's the way it is in everything in the Big Ten. So don't, you know, in football, who wasn't on Penn State's schedule this year? Michigan State hasn't been on the schedule the last 3 years. You know, because you can only have so many dual meets or so many games that you play in conference. Well, this time it turned out that Iowa rotated off of Penn State's wrestling schedule. Iowa and Penn State get that it's great for the sport. They wrestle one another. But Cale Sanderson does not have to go up front and promote the virtues of his wrestling program, ever. By performance, it sells itself. So when you're in a position where you're trying to sell what's going on, you need to get out and sell. James Franklin's brilliant at it. Dominate the state. Okay, how many of the 25 signees this year were Pennsylvania players?
I don't know. I didn't count that one. That's a good question. I didn't see that.
Give me a number. How many you think out of 25?
Five.
Three. Okay. Now, this is part of what Bill O'Brien was building, which he inherited, and then also then how he finished out. Relationships that they had with people they knew. Now, the next cycle, they'll have 25 guys that they can go through. They can go the full 25 and then get it to 80 next year. Okay? But he tells everybody in the first press conference, we're going to dominate the state. Now, give me an idea how much that juiced the populace. They loved it. The Penn State fan loved it. Blunt, out front, quote, we're going to dominate the state. Then he opens up the recruiting thing so people can see. He makes a big deal out of signing day, and the fans have loved it so far. We know they can coach. They went 16-4 their last 20 games at Vanderbilt. But this part, out front, okay, getting the message out front, being in front all the time. Patrick Chambers has been doing the same thing with basketball here. Why do you think he said new Bill and Frazier, best backcourt in the country? He said it for two reasons. So he could give a little kick in the backside to new Bill and Frazier to have a great offseason to be the best backcourt in the country. But he also did it so the fans would hear him say it, and maybe they would come out and be a part of what's going on. Tim Miles is doing the same thing with Nebraska basketball. He gets out front all the time. When you look at the Southeastern Conference in years gone by, the Southeastern Conference is a football-dominated conference. The guys that have been successful in the SEC over decades, Dale Brown, LSU, two Final Fours, Wimp Sanderson, Sweet 16s at Alabama, Hugh Durham, a Final Four at Georgia, even a guy that's been in trouble like Bruce Pearl, who got in trouble with the Aaron Kraft thing. They were always guys that were out front making sure you knew of their successes. Because they had to. Even Billy Donovan in Florida has had to do it. Florida basketball doesn't sell out often enough. And that's the kind of personality today that you need, where the head coach has to be out front as the salesman.